Hello, this is Nikki Ambrose with the Ford County Record dated August 28th. We will begin today's reading on the front page with A Place Like Home. Paxton Homes Tapping into Airbnb Market by Will Brumlevy. Paxton. The popularity of the Airbnb, a home rented out for a night, a weekend, or even a week or a month, has been growing worldwide, and it's no longer a big city thing either. The small community of Paxton, for example, has at least three homes listed on the Airbnb website, airbnb.com, bringing travelers from across the globe to the Ford County town. A lot of these things, like Uber and Airbnb, are city things, but that doesn't mean we can't also tap into this market, said Jolyn Anya Munitz, who has been renting out two of her three homes in Paxton through Airbnb.com, with visitor stays ranging from a night to 2 months. Corey and Diane Tavener began doing the same this summer when they started listing a house they own on West State Street on Airbnb.com. The Taverners bought the two-story, 102-year-old home in 2012 with the idea of turning it into an antique shop, which it ended up being for a while. But after talking with a friend from Chicago who had operated an Airbnb and had been successful at it, the Taverners realized the money they could make by turning the house into one as well. Since then, the Taverner's house near Paxton's downtown has been rented dozens of times, including for 17 nights in June alone. Everybody loves this place, Corey Tavener said. This house was built in 1917, so we tried to stay with that thought and that look. People like coming to a house like this. They say it's just like going to Grandma's, and that's what we were shooting for. Just down the road, Minutes has been seeing equally positive feedback from her many guests at her two Airbnb houses on West Pell Street and West Orleans Street. Her guests have included a family of doctors from Pakistan, a family from Germany visiting the U.S. for the first time, members of a sorority at the University of Illinois who used the place for a bonding experience, and a group of Chinese exchange students who rented the house for a celebration of the Chinese New Year. The family from Germany, it was the first time they were ever out of the country, Minnett said. And I was like, you want to come to Paxton as your first trip? And they were like, yeah, we come from a small farm town in Germany, so we figured we'd visit another small town here in the U.S. And I was like, okay, awesome. Meanwhile, the Taverner's guests have ranged from Paxton natives making a return to visit people attending funerals, class reunions, or weddings. Just everything you can imagine, Corey Tavener said. The people who stay here, they just absolutely love it, Corey Tavener said. Most of them say they don't even care if they ever stay at a hotel again, because you get a lot more money for your money at an Airbnb. And it's just the personal feeling of staying in a home, I'd say. When you go to a hotel, you've got lots of issues to deal with noise, etc. But with this here, you've got your own little house and you can do what you want. You don't have to worry if the person in the next room is being excessively noisy. The price to rent one out of the three Paxton homes is comparable with how much one would pay at a hotel, but Tavener noted that the experience is different. You're getting the whole house, he said. Everything you would pretty much want at home is here. The Taverners rent out their entire house for $85 per night, Sunday through Thursday, and for $100 per night on Fridays and Saturday. Stays of a week result in a 25% discount, while stays of a month result in a 50% discount. Minutes, meanwhile, charges $100 per night for up to six guests, with a $10 charge for each additional guest per night. There is also a $50 cleaning fee. All three Paxton homes also require a $500 security deposit to cover potential damages. Both the host and the guest also pay a small service fee to Airbnb.com. Both of Minutes' Airbnb houses are within a short walk from the city's historic downtown, and the Taverner's house is even closer. While the home's fridges are not kept fully stocked for their guests, the availability of several restaurants and even a 24-hour grocery store downtown provides some convenience. At the Taverner House, Guests can check out the menus from every Paxton restaurant in a binder in the home's dining room. The 24-hour IGA is the biggest thing guests comment about, Corey Tavener said, because most people come here and can't believe it. They're like, we live in a big city and we don't have a 24-hour grocery store, but this little town does, and just a block away? Guests at any of the three of the homes often visit the grocery store to buy the meals they cook in the home's kitchens. The Taverners do not stock the fridge, but do provide water, coffee, tea, popcorn, and other snacks. Minutes said she may put a loaf of bread in the freezer or provide a few snacks, but otherwise she no longer keeps her Airbnb kitchens fully stocked. Minutes noted that Paxton's three Airbnb homes each have a unique style and personality, featuring their own look and feel. With that said, each house may attract a different clientele, so that they are not necessarily competing against each other on the Airbnb market, Minutes said. While an Airbnb brings in money for the host, it also brings people into town, giving a small boost to a community's economy. I love promoting our town through this, Minnett said. The next article is titled Excitement Builds as New School Readies for Opening by Will Brumlevy, newly renovated school addition to set to open September 6th, Paxton. When Cliff McClure spoke to a crowd gathered outside Clara Peterson Elementary School in Paxton in April 2018 to memorialize the start of construction of a two-story, 63,400-square-foot addition to the school's east side, he was already looking forward to the day that we open this state-of-the-art facility to our staff and students. About 17 months later, the day has almost arrived. When the school year begins in the Paxton-Buckley-Loda School District on Friday, September 6th, PBL's 2nd through 5th graders will step foot inside their new school building for the first time as Clara Peterson Elementary School's pre-K through 1st graders are welcomed back by a newly renovated building of their own directly next door. I'm excited for our students, I really am, said McClure, the district superintendent. I think our students are really going to enjoy this, and it will be something to be remembered. It will be a great... The occasion will also mark the culmination of several years of work by the district. It was back in 2012 when the school board first began discussing what to do with the district's oldest school facility, 94-year-old PBL East Lawn School. Those talks eventually led to the district soliciting community input on the future of the district's facilities and then passing a ballot question in 2016 that authorized the district to issue $31.45 million in building bonds to give it the funds it needed to build the school addition, renovate the existing Clara Peterson Elementary School space, and tear down PBL East Lawn School. It was the biggest capital improvement project the district had undertaken since 2005, when a new junior high school was built. The work was nearing completion as of Friday, although the new Media Center library in the renovated Clara Peterson building likely will not be finished until about a week after school starts, McClure said. The biggest reason for that is it's a large area, and construction crews are using it for material laydown, so it's the last to get worked on, McClure said. So we will not have a library at Clara Peterson for a week. Until the media center is finished, McClure said, library materials will be available on a cart, something that the school's librarian, Susan Skonberg, is on board with. Other than that, though, the newly renovated Clara Peterson Elementary School, along with the new addition next door, will be ready to serve their students and staff. McClure said staff members are already moving into their classrooms. McClure credited the district staff members for being very patient and flexible as the district was forced to delay the usual start of school by a couple of weeks this summer due to the amount of work that still needed to be completed. McClure noted that a lot of work was done in a short period of time. Staff members who have already seen the renovated school and its new addition have provided McClure with positive feedback. Not only are the facilities up to date and fully air-conditioned, but the facilities are also more user-friendly for both students and staff. They'll be able to do some things they've never done before, McClure said. I'm very excited for our community, and I'm very excited for our students and staff because it's going to be nice. The school district is inviting the community to a dedication event for the renovated school and its new addition, scheduled for 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, September 28th. During the event, to be held on homecoming weekend, the public will have the opportunity to tour the facilities and hear remarks by school district officials, architects, and construction managers. Meanwhile, Clara Peterson Elementary School students and their families are being invited to tour the new addition and the renovated space on three evenings next month. So-called backpack nights, which are basically orientation events, will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. September 3rd for students in grades 4 and 5, and September 4th for students in grades 2 and 3, and September 5th for students in pre-K through first grade in advance of the first day of the 2019-20 school year on Friday, September 6th. The backpack nights will not only involve tours, but also a free meal provided to students and their families, McClure said. Each backpack night will also include a 20 to 30 minute meeting starting at 6 p.m. to inform parents and students of any new school rules and information on new traffic patterns, including student drop-off and pickup policies, McClure said. McClure said students and their families can come just for the meeting if they choose. Alternatively, they can come for the meeting plus tours and food either before or after the meeting. The next article on the front page is entitled Engineering Contract Okayed for New Water Tower by Will Brumlevy. Gibson City. The Gibson City Council voted unanimously Monday night to spend $218,033 on engineering services for a proposed new water tower. Champaign-based Donahoe & Associates will complete the engineering work once the city learns whether it has been awarded a low-interest loan from the state to help pay for the anticipated $3 million project, Mayor Dan Dickey said. Dickey said he expects that to happen within 30 to 60 days. The city applied last September for a loan of up to $3 million through the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency's Revolving Loan Program. Dickey noted that the city may be eligible for $800,000 in loan forgiveness, meaning the city would be required to pay back only $2.2 million. The proposed 500,000-gallon water tower would be located in the Jordan Industrial Park on the city's west edge. It would be the third water tower serving the city, with the two others holding 300,000 and 100,000 gallons, respectively, Dickey said. Dickey said the new water tower would accommodate the city's future growth, as well as ensure the city can keep enough water in its water towers to last at least 36 hours in the event of a power outage. Other business. Also at Monday's City Council meeting, the council voted unanimously to approve a special liquor license allowing burgers and beer to sell alcohol outside in the alley adjacent to its restaurant at 109 West 8th Street from 4 to 11 p.m. Friday, September 13th, and 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Saturday, September 14th, in conjunction with the city's annual Harvest Fest. The council approved the purchase of a 2020 Ford half-ton four-wheel drive pickup truck for $28,360 and a 2020 Ford three-quarter-ton four-wheel drive pickup truck with snowplow mounting brackets for $30,860. Both trucks will be purchased from the Anderson Ford dealership in Gibson City. Both bids were the lowest received by the city. Dickey said the purchase of the two trucks represents a continuation of the city's gradual upgrading of the city's vehicle fleet. Dickey said one of the new trucks will be used by the Streets and Alleys Department, while the other will be used by the Sewer Department. Upon the request of Police Chief Adam Rosendahl, the council postponed approving the sale of the police department's 2010 Chevrolet Impala squad car. Alderman Susie Tongate said Gibson City resident Randy Ferguson would continue to serve as manager of the city's swimming pool next summer, and Hannah Cliff will remain the head lifeguard, Tongate said. Tongate said Ferguson had also agreed to help train a new manager once one is hired following the construction of a new outdoor pool. Members of Ed Day's Skate Park Committee presented a $2,000 check to the city to go toward the construction of a skate park at the city's West Park. The skate park would be named in honor of Mr. Day, who died in 2017 after being elected to the City Council. The skate park committee is raising funds for the proposed facility through a variety of ways, including a Queen of Hearts raffle that is conducted each Wednesday night at the American Legion Post downtown. Each week in which a Queen of Hearts is not drawn, the jackpot rises. The jackpot now totals about $15,000. Raffle tickets cost $1 each. Gary Lutterby, chairman of the Fishing Pond Committee, said he received a $3,700 donation from Gibson City Area Hospital and Health Services to go toward the construction of a pavilion at the dog park located by the fishing pond on the city's west edge. Lutterby also said that a walking path bike trail had been completed around the pond. Gibson City resident Matt Kudemeyer said he would like permission to repaint the Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School Falcons logo that appear on the state street leading to the high school. The final article on the front page is Possible Plea Coming in Beating of Elderly Man by Will Brumlevy, Watsika. 2 years after pleading not guilty to two counts of aggravated battery in connection with the beating of an elderly man outside a Buckley bar, Shane A. Weber could be changing his plea. Iroquois County Circuit Court records show that the 26-year-old rural Buckley man is due in court before Judge James Kinzer at 1:30 p.m. September 9th for a possible plea. The case was continued to September 9th during a pretrial hearing on Monday when Weber appeared in court with his attorney, Ron Boyer, for the scheduling of his. Weber allegedly beat Buckley resident Michael L. Hilligoss, then 67, on July 9, 2017, outside the Dutchmaster Bar in Buckley, and he pleaded not guilty the following month to two counts of aggravated battery. Hilligoss told the Ford County Record that he was left with bruises and cuts all over his head and body, a broken collarbone, and hemorrhaging in his brain. Hilligoss was hospitalized for 2 days after the incident. One of the charges filed against Weber is a Class II felony, alleging Weber caused great bodily harm to a person 60 years of age or older. The other is a Class III felony, alleging Weber knew the victim was age 60 or older. Both charges allege that Weber struck Hilligoss on his head. If convicted of the Class II felony, Weber would face a mandatory sentence ranging from up to 4 years of probation to up to 3 to 7 years in prison, according to Truth in Sentencing guidelines. Weber, who listed an address at 561 North Iroquois County Road 600 East, has remained free since posting 10% of his $25,000 bond in July 2017. Now we'll take a short break and switch to the obituaries. Obituaries. Kelsey Marie Baylor, Fairbury. Kelsey Marie Baylor, 31, of Fairbury, granddaughter of a Kempton resident, died at 1:32 a.m. Sunday, August 25, 2019, at her residence. The funeral will be at 10 a.m. Friday, August 30th, at the First Baptist Church of Fairbury, with the Reverend Darrell Evans officiating. Burial will follow in the South Apostolic Christian Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 29th at the Duffy Pills Memorial Home in Fairbury and from 9 to 10 a.m. Friday, August 30th at the church. Crystal Lynn Barry, Hinsdale. Crystal Lynn Barry, 38, formerly of Gibson City, died Thursday, August 15th, 2019 at the Hinsdale Hospital in Hinsdale. A celebration of her life was at 10 a.m. Monday, August 26th, at the Trinity Evangelical Church, 1658 East Walnut Street, Watsika. She was interred at the Berry Plot in Pena. James Lee Brammer, Gilman. James Jim Lee Brammer, 73, of Gilman, formerly of Milford, died Monday, August 26, 2019, at the Gilman Healthcare Center. A celebration of his life will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, September 21st at the Life Church in Gilman. Cremation rites were accorded. Arrangements were handled by the Beyer Funeral Home in Watsika. Lorraine Goldenstein, Gilman. Lorraine S. Goldenstein, 96, of Gilman, died Tuesday, August 20th, 2019, at her home. Visitation was from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, August 24th, at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Gilman, with the Reverend Pete Henrich officiating. A funeral service followed the visitation at 11 a.m. at the church, followed by burial at Wenger Cemetery in Gilman. Arrangements were handled by the Knapp Redenius Funeral Home in Gilman. Deborah K. Harper, Mansfield. Deborah K. Debbie Harper, 58, of Mansfield, mother of a Roberts resident, died at 12:05 p.m. Friday, August 16, 2019, at her home. Visitation was from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, August 25th, at the Mansfield United Methodist Church. A private family memorial service and private family interment will be held at a later date at the Mansfield Cemetery. Calvert Belongi Bruce Funeral Home in Mansfield is assisting the family with arrangements. Tori Jessie Lynn Irvin, Gilman. Tori Jessie Lynn Irvin, 21, of Gilman, died at 8:20 p.m. Tuesday, August 20, 2019, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation was from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, August 27, at the Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. A funeral service followed the visitation at 1 p.m. at the funeral home with the Reverend David Bowen officiating. Burial followed the service in Floral Hill Cemetery in Hoopston. Ruby Myrtle Jacobs, Rantoul. Ruby Myrtle Jacobs, 97, of Rantoul, who has nieces and nephews living in Buckley, died at 1:45 a.m. Friday, August 23, 2019, at Country Health Care and Rehab in Gifford. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 4th, at Beyer Family Funeral Services, 406 East Pell Street, Paxton, with Reverend Maxine Rixman officiating. Burial will follow in Eden Park Cemetery, Rantoul. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 4th, at the funeral home. Viva Pearl Lang. Viva Pearl Lang, 94, of Chatsworth, a native of Piper City, died at 4:50 p.m. Monday, August 19, 2019, at Piper City Rehab and Living Center in Piper City. Funeral services were at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 24th, at the Calvary Baptist Church in Chatsworth with the Reverend Ed Bunt officiating. Visitation was from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 23rd, at the Calvert and Martin Funeral Home in Chatsworth, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, August 24th, at the church. Burial followed the funeral services at the Chatsworth Charlotte Cemetery. Wayne E. Tyler, Loda. Wayne E. Tyler, 91, of Savoy, formerly of Loda, died Monday, August 19, 2019, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of his life will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 3rd, at Rosenbaum Funeral Home, 925 North Illinois 47, Gibson City. The Reverend Jim Davis will be officiating. Burial will be in Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 3rd, at the funeral home. Jeanette M. Winder, Buckley. Jeanette M. Winder, 83, of Buckley, died at 2:20 a.m. Saturday, August 24, 2019, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pells. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 28th, at Our Savior Lutheran Church, 209 West Jones Street, Milford, with the Reverend Carl Gibbs officiating. Burial will follow in St. John's Cemetery in Buckley. Visitation was from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 27th, at Beyer Family Funeral Services, 306 East Lincoln Street, Buckley, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 28th, at Our Savior Lutheran Church in Milford. Returning to the local news, State Trooper warns of scams targeting elderly in area, Gibson City. The August meeting of the Governor Thomas Ford chapter of the National Society of Daughters of the American Revolution, NSDAR, was held Monday night at the American Lutheran Church in Gibson City. The evening meal presents members an annual opportunity to invite their husbands and prospective members to attend. The evening's program was presented by State Trooper Jane Bufford, a 12-year veteran of the Illinois State Police. Bufford spoke about how to avoid scammers who prey, especially on the elderly, via telephone, email, and the internet. Such scams were termed a rising epidemic that is estimated across the U.S. to steal $37 billion from the elderly in a single year alone. Chapter Regent Carol Camp conducted the business meeting that followed the program. In addition to regular business, the following announcements were made. Constitution Week will be observed September 17th to 23rd. Member Joyce Schmale of Mahomet, who is the State Constitution Week chairman, provided a display of information about the observance. Judy Jepson Popple invited members to attend the Ford County Historical Society's dinner meeting on September 17th to enjoy a costumed portrayal of Benjamin Franklin. Chapter members will assist with refreshments at the Paxton Fire Department's commemorative observance of 9/11, beginning with the Paxton Buckley Loda High School Band's performance at 5:30 p.m. on the evening of September 11th. DAR Days will be held in Springfield on September 13th. At least 7 members are planning to attend. The chapter's next meeting will be October 7th at the Moyer District Library. From the Gibson Area Music Foundation, officers elected, date set for a Messiah performance. Gibson City. The Gibson Area Music Foundation held its regular quarterly board meeting on August 19th to elect officers and review plans for again sponsoring the annual Community Messiah performance. Chairman Sherry Friedman reviewed plans that have been made along with folders of information. Friedman is resigning her seat on the board after a 4-year term. Galen Litwiller of rural Paxton was elected chairman, a role he has filled previously. Jack Colruss of Gibson City was reelected as vice chairman. Also re-elected to their current offices were Treasurer Gene Nolish and Secretary Margie Shambrook, both of Gibson City. 2 new board members, Connie Knox and Lee Sharp of Gibson City, were elected to the board in May. Sharp will chair the group's youth scholarship program, and Knox will help direct the Messiah publicity. The 2019 scholarship recipients were Keegan Frazier, Spencer Hazen, Ethan Casper, and Skylar Morano. This year's Messiah performance will be December 8th, which is a slight departure from the traditional date of the first Sunday in December at the Gibson City Bible Church. And now we'll move to the sports page. Week 1, PBL Panthers at GCMS Falcons, first exam. 2-time state champion GCMS hosts PBL team with new coach as Ford County teams renew rivalry. When Josh Pritchard was hired last May to be Paxton Buckley Loda High School's head football coach, the community declared one of its goals to him. The first thing Pritchard said he heard from the community regards the Panthers' season opening contest at 7 p.m. Friday against PBL's Ford County counterpart, Gibson City Melvin Sibley. People were saying, "We really want to beat GCMS this year," Pritchard said. The excitement about the game is not lost on GCMS head coach Mike Allen, who graduated from Paxton High School. "I've talked to a lot of people in Paxton," Allen said. "They're excited. The community's excited. The kids are excited. I expect them to have a great year. Hopefully, we do also." The Falcons will host PBL after winning 28 games, including back-to-back IHSA Class 2A state championships over the past 2 seasons. Meanwhile, Pritchard is entering his first year as PBL's head coach after his predecessor, Jeff Graham, led the Panthers to 5 straight playoff appearances. "That adds a greater element of the unexpected than a Week 1 game usually provides," said Allen. Pritchard said he hopes his team can score some points this time around. "We obviously have to score points to win football games," Pritchard said. "We run a good program, so it's going to be one of those games that's going to be a good high school football game. It's not going to be sloppy or anything like that. They're going to be prepared." Regardless of the outcome, Pritchard said his team will be on to Week 2. And that's the Ford County record for August 28th. This has been Nikki Ambrose. I look forward to reading with you again soon.